Understood is a resource I have recommended for many years to parents looking for support with learning and thinking differences such as ADHD, dyslexia, and more. And I'm subsequently excited to tell you about their podcast, Understood Explains. This season, the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Urtube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs. They cover topics such as how to tell if your child needs an IEP, common myths about special education, and the difference between IEPs and 504 plans. I love how Understood Explains breaks down the overwhelm by unpacking an important topic each season and then drilling down further into key basics in each episode. Most episodes are between 10 to 15 minutes, and episodes are available in both English and Spanish. So fantastic, right? To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome to Edit Your Life, a podcast to help you edit the unnecessary from your life so you have more room to enjoy the awesome. Through episodes with me, your host, Christine Coe, and a range of super smart, compassionate, and thoughtful guests, you will come away with big picture insights and practical ways to declutter your home, schedule, and mental space without getting bogged down by perfection. I have always believed that small moments and actions matter tremendously. My goal is to help you find agency and space in your life through doable baby steps that will leave you feeling accomplished instead of overwhelmed. Hello, friends. I am excited to bring you something different today. I have been wanting to talk for some time with Casey Davis. Casey is a licensed professional counselor, author, speaker, and the person behind the mental health platform Struggle Care. She has a podcast by the same name and is the author of How to Keep House While Drowning. Casey and I recently connected and decided to do something a little bit different, a two-part podcast series. And during our initial chat to discuss what we might talk about, we both lit up about the idea of addressing gratitude during hard seasons. And at that point, decided to span the conversation across two episodes because, well, there is a lot to talk about. This topic was top of mind for us given that we are squarely on the holiday runway, yet also tough seasons are ever present. So I think that no matter when you are coming to this conversation, there will be much here for you. I know from listening to Casey's show that she is compassionate and practical, a deep and nuanced thinker. But it was another thing to record directly with her, and truly, it was so nourishing, and I felt my mind expanding as I listened to her perspective on things. You can hear the first part of our conversation, Gratitude During Hard Seasons, on Struggle Care. And in that episode, we talk about reframing perspectives on gratitude, and cover everything from toxic positivity to strategies to enable mind shifts to flexing emotional muscles, while also accounting for one's lived experiences. In today's episode, the second part, we focus on tactical framing, covering topics such as how we have tapped into gratitude over time, relationships and finding support, and practical coping skills. I really hope you enjoy these two conversations and be sure to subscribe to Struggle Care. Now, one of the things that came up in our conversations was the power of articulating gratitude. So I thought I would take this moment to read a listener review. The title of the review is Like Talking with a Best Friend. I recommend Edit Your Life to the parents and humans in my life all the time. Past episodes with Christine and Asha are like listening in to a conversation between my own friends. I learned so much from their easy and thoughtful conversations. It's enlightening. I feel like I've become more empathetic with my kids and in life because of this podcast. The latest episodes with Christine are like having a chat with a friend over coffee. Thank you for teaching me gratitude, empathy, and mindfulness. I am so deeply grateful that people share themselves both with me directly via email or direct messages, and then also in public via reviews like this. They warm my heart so very much and really propel me to keep doing what I'm doing here. So thank you. I would be so grateful if you would tell a friend about Edit Your Life sometime soon. That's what will help the show continue to grow and help us all continue to make change in our very small, micro, and joyful ways together. We'll be right back. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Do you struggle with boundaries and the general complexities of peopling? Relationships are necessary to our well-being, and some relationships are just, well, complicated. A good chunk of the work I have done in therapy centers on relationships, how to own my part of the story, how to let go of relationships that are toxic, and how to navigate challenging relationships in a way that doesn't drain me. And all of this work helps me show up better for myself and also as a partner, mom, friend, family member, and business owner. If you're thinking of starting therapy, check out BetterHelp. This online therapy platform was designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/edit today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/edit. As you know, I value stories and the connection that the sharing of stories can bring so much. And if you're looking for a gift for Mother's Day, check out StoryWorth. StoryWorth is all about celebrating and preserving stories. Every week, StoryWorth emails a loved one of your choosing a question prompt that you pick. For example, how did you decide when to have children? And what was your mom like when you were a child? Your loved one simply responds to the email with a story of any length. You will receive copies of these emails, and after 1 year, StoryWorth compiles the stories and any photos provided into a keepsake book. Funny enough, I was just chatting with a neighbor who told me that her mom gifted copies of her StoryWorth album to immediate family members, and literally everyone was crying, in a good, loving way. I loved this example because while yes, StoryWorth is a great gift between a parent and kid, in this case, it was a gift from sister to sister that then was shared across generations. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years, StoryWorth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/edit. That's storyworth.com/edit to save $10 on your first purchase. So, Casey, I am just so delighted to continue this conversation. We have an amazing conversation on reframing around gratitude that has happened over on your incredible podcast, Struggle Care. So thanks for joining me for another session. This is going to be awesome.
Yeah, I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, this is great. Well, I wanted to get a little bit tactical and start with, and again, I really talk a lot on Edit Your Life and through Asha and my book about how you need sort of the foundational structure in order to implement true and lasting change. So I really recommend folks go over and listen to our conversation on Struggle Care, because we talk a lot about, I mean, everything, Casey, right? Toxic positivity, yeah, and gratitude as a muscle to develop. I mean, there was so much, but I would love for you to start us off here, because I thought it would be really interesting to talk about how we have tapped into gratitude over time. And I was hoping you wouldn't mind winding back towards the start of your, or as a young adult, a teenager, because I think how we tap into it is going to change an awful lot depending on where we are in life.
Yeah. I mean, so I mentioned in the last episode, this idea of a gratitude list that my rehab made me keep. I was in rehab for 18 and a half months when I was 16. I had a really severe drug addiction, a lot of mental health problems. And one of the things that was the most difficult about recovering from addiction is that when you use drugs, you are really affecting your brain chemistry. You're really affecting the neural pathways of your brain. And you're really messing with this concept called the hedonic threshold. Mm-hmm. So hedonic, same root as hedonism, you know, the idea of pleasure. Mm-hmm. That when I was using substances, when I was using cocaine, when I was using meth, I was flooding my brain. I was going, or it's more accurate to say that the drugs were triggering my brain to flood me with all the feel-good chemical hormones that my brain creates. Mm-hmm. But your brain really likes homeostasis. It really likes balance. It really likes to kind of level off. And so every time I did that, I sort of upped my standard for what feels good.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you think of like a ceiling, you know, you have these really great things in life that feel amazing, like Christmas morning that like kind of hit that ceiling. And then you have the things that maybe feel midway, like going on a date with your husband. And then you have things toward the bottom, like, oh, I saw a beautiful flower today, right? And then, you know, moving down towards things that aren't happy at all or pleasurable at all. But it really wants to kind of keep this idea of a basic baseline. Mm-hmm. And if you put enough drugs into your brain, you will blow through that ceiling to heights of euphoria you have never felt before. And it feels amazing in the moment, but your brain starts to go, well, that's too high. So let's reset baseline. If that's what is going to feel really, really good, let's just move the whole scale up. So what you find after some time is that the things that used to bring you pleasure, like seeing a pretty flower, like going on a date with your husband, like playing with your puppy or watching a good TV show, they no longer feel good.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got sober and I stopped using drugs, what was so difficult was that I felt emotionally numb and I felt like nothing made me happy. And so you can obviously see why you would just go back to using drugs, but I couldn't because I was institutionalized. And it was explained to me that it was going to take some time for my brain to learn how to reset that threshold so that I could experience pleasure again when doing normal, pleasurable things.
Mm-hmm. So what did those first steps look like? Where, how do you do that after a reset or something like that when your threshold is in a different place?
Well, the hardest one that was made easier by the fact I was institutionalized was staying away from the substances,
mm-hmm.
was staying away from the big spikes.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of learning some coping skills to deal with distressing emotions so that I didn't feel like I had to run to those things.
Mm.
But that freaking gratitude list was one of the things that they told me to do. And it felt really silly.
And explain that in case people are listening to this episode first before they listen to our conversation on struggle care.
So we had this list of things we had to do every day. And there were a few things on that list. One of them was like, talk about your feelings for 15 minutes to a friend.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was like, read a like an inspirational kind of meditational book. One of them was meditate in the morning. And one of them was make a list of 10 things that you are grateful for. And we had to do this every single day. And a lot of these things are things that in the moment they didn't feel like they were doing anything. But over time, I realized that they started to genuinely build new neural pathways in my brain.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you start off with writing down the big things like I'm grateful to be sober today. I'm grateful for my mother. I'm grateful for this, that and the other. And then like by day 7, day 14, day 364, you're like, okay, let me think of some other things to be grateful for here. And you start having to put like the smallest of things, right? Like that piece of pizza I had for lunch, that was such a good piece of pizza.
Yep.
Or like it rained last night and I fell asleep to the sound of the rain. And so while I'm dealing with these huge emotional issues, I don't think I'm worthy. I've been abandoned, you know, all these sort of things. I'm doing that in therapy. Like I'm doing that at the same time. I'm being forced to focus on parts of my day that brought me pleasure, even if it was momentarily. And it, mm-hmm. we talked a little in the first episode about the idea that like joy is the momentary experience and gratitude is the reflection and amplification of the joy. And so, yeah, it was nice when I heard that rain, but then forcing myself to think back
mm-hmm.
on that moment of pleasure when I heard the rain, that was creating really important neural pathways in my brain, wiring my brain for seeing the good, for being more optimistic, because my brain was so wired to see the negative and to see the reasons to go back and use. And so it was these small things. And I think what was so important is that it wasn't like do a gratitude journal instead of go to therapy. It wasn't do a gratitude journal instead of get sober, instead of go cry about how you feel abandoned, instead of look at your sense of worthiness and figure out a way to repair that. It was something alongside of, not to erase the bad stuff. Or if you don't think about, you know, how much everything sucks to be 16 in rehab and you just think about the rain, how good the rain looks. It, you know, it doesn't erase it. It doesn't make it better. But it was teaching my brain to recognize that the pain is survivable.
Mm-hmm.
And that joy and beauty is still existing in my life, even in small pieces.
Yes. Yes. You know, this really reminds me of a story, of a situation, really. This was a few years back. I can't even remember exactly. I feel like it's like 3 years. It was a little more because it was pre-pandemic, but I was having a really chaotic summer. And I had this experience in my office where I don't even know what happened to me physiologically. Like, the best that my husband and I could characterize it as was some kind of like stress seizure. I basically collapsed onto the floor, could not move, and was sort of like momentarily just sort of frozen for some, not momentarily, I mean, some moments of time. Like, I was just in a very, very bad place. And, you know, once I got moving again, and it's incredible how much like sort of either blocking out or stress or whatever contributes to how much of that I've erased in my memory. But once I got myself back up and into a chair and like, oh my gosh, what on earth just happened? It was at that moment where I decided, it's making me think of your list and us writing our lists at the same time, even though you were 16 years old when you were doing it. But I said, okay, all right, I'm in triage mode. Like, I'm in a really bad way. I need to write down the tiny little things that will help me, you know, be in a better place, decrease my stress, whatever it may be. And actually, I don't even think I was telling myself they must be small. But what I realized when I read the list, I mean, the list was very micro. It was things like playing tennis with my husband down at the tennis courts around the corner from our house, or reading a book, or making a batch of cookies with my kids. I mean, really, like, one, the things, my two realizations were, one, that the things were very small. And two, the really big one was that the things were very accessible. They were right in my reach. It wasn't like I was saying, if I could just escape to Aruba for like 3 weeks, all would be well. It was very, very doable. And that was how I slowly sort of pulled myself out of the hole. And it wasn't, you know, we talk a lot beautifully, and you had so many beautiful framings in our other conversation, but you know, we talked a lot about not discounting the difficult and the hard feelings and all of that, and how crucial that is. And that, you know, working through that helps you pull yourself out of the hole. And I really feel like that's where I was in that moment, like tapping into those small things. I'm not sure if I had full capacity to be extraordinarily grateful about them, but I had enough in the tank where it was helping.
Yeah. It also makes me think, you know, we're talking about this right before we go into the holidays. And we mentioned that briefly on the other episode, of especially if you are what I refer to as like the magic maker in your home or your family. And it's like, okay, I'm hosting twice for Thanksgiving and Christmas, and I'm really excited about it. It's the first time since I moved to a place where I actually have room to host that I'm doing it. And one of the things that's been really key for me the last couple of years, as sort of the magic maker, is slowing down and looking at, you know, what am I about to do in this holiday season that I want to do that brings me joy? And what am I about to do because I feel obligated?
Yes.
Because I feel judged, because I feel like it's important, because I feel like I'll disappoint someone. And I mean, I'm a realist. I'm not saying that just do whatever you want to do, nobody matters. But I think that part of this conversation is also about, like, if I want to be able to maximize my ability to see the good, to feel grateful, to amplify the joy, part of that is also, what do I need to sort of step back from?
Mm-hmm.
What can I let go of? You know, it doesn't need to be perfect, and we don't need to do every single invite, and I don't have to put on a show. And, you know, maybe it's also sitting down with your family and saying, I don't want to be the only magic maker, right? who let's redistribute some of this magical labor. And, you know, maybe I won't go, and this isn't me personally, but maybe you're going, maybe I won't go to that family Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe I'll do a Friendsgiving, or maybe I will. Like, I think that that's a part of this conversation too, is like, you know, I think the practices of gratitude are only as powerful as the partner practices that you're pairing them with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's incredible. And it took me a beat to realize that you were actually talking about you, not like hypothetical you, but you actually hosting multiple events. So I'm like trying not to hyperventilate over here. But it did make me think about, because it's interesting, I have two kids and my older one is definitely a doer like me. I mean, I think your term magic maker, and I would characterize her with me in that. And I remember she was quite a bit younger, but we had one holiday season. I think we must have been hosting, because I don't know why we would have had such a laundry list of things to do otherwise. But she was getting really wound up about all the things to do. And in that moment, I just said, you know what? Let's reorder this list and reorder it in the order of fun. Like, what would be the most fun things to do? And then like the more obligatory things fall to the end of the list. And then I said, let's just start in order. And that way, you know, the stuff that we don't get to that falls off on the bottom of the list, like it probably means we really, really didn't want to do it anyway. And it wasn't that necessary. And it ended up being this like unexpected magical exercise, because we got to focus on the stuff we were super excited about. And then there was all sorts of obligatory crap that we just didn't do. And it was great.
Well, and I feel like that is the practice of gratitude, because so far I feel like we've talked a lot about like kind of the recognition, like looking for, remembering, reflecting. But I think there's really something to be said about the practice of gratitude also being, you know, saying no to things.
Yes.
And taking the pressure off. Because if I recognize, like, going into this season, I have so many things to be grateful for that I, you know, harking back to our other like definition, like I have so many good things, the potential for so many good things that benefit me and bring me pleasure that are not even of my doing, just like things really good about life that I'm going to get to enjoy, but I'm only going to get to enjoy them, like, if I take seriously my right to rest, letting go of perfection, not trying to be all things to all people. Like, I think in some ways that is the practice of gratitude, of I don't want those moments to slip by. I don't want to sit there on Christmas morning and be so stressed about ABC not being right, or being so overworked that I'm just, you know, I'm done by the halfway through the day, because I won't get to engage those small things that otherwise would have brought me a lot of pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Well, now I have to ask you one of my all-important favorite topical questions, which is based on your personal and professional experiences. I would love for you to share how or what are some of your best tactics for establishing the boundaries or saying no in relationships that you care about? Because I feel like that's going to be really important for people. And it will offer, when you can do that, it offers the space to be grateful both for showing up aligned to your values and also still having space in your life. That's how I'm framing it anyway.
Yeah. Well, I think the first one is like when it comes to my kids and the amount of things that like school puts out.
Ooh, yes.
Like when they get to an age, so there's an age where they don't notice, but when they get to an age where you actually sit down with them and you model that, like, man, here's all of the stuff. And if we try to do all of it, we won't have fun in any of it. So like, let's talk about whether it's, you know, which of these events are we going to go to, or even like, you know, literally the school calendar is like, on the first of the day, wear crazy socks. On the second of the day, wear crazy hair. On the third of the day, and it's like the whole month. And I'm like, here's the thing. I am unwilling to purchase items every single day for these things. I'm unwilling to be yelling at people in the morning about it. I'm unwilling to be stressed about it at night. Like, let's sit down and talk about which of these things we will be participating in. Mm-hmm. I think that's a big part of it. I think another, you know, I had to look at what I was doing and why. So like I love to decorate. I love it a lot, right? Mm-hmm. I will, my mom comes over, we decorate the whole house. I don't love to cook. And so I am not going to cook some big spread for Thanksgiving. Now mm-hmm. I'm hosting Thanksgiving.
Potluck. That is your friend.
Right? Like I'm either, you know, there's so many options. You can potluck, you can this. I've been like, I go to the grocery store or do I go to the honey baked ham place and I'll say, okay, I will cook a turkey and I'll cook like our family's famous dressing. And then like, I'm going to buy the other sides or ask somebody else to make the other sides. Whereas I think that somebody else might feel differently about those. They might go, I love nothing more than being in the kitchen with my family cooking, but like, I don't care what the house looks like.
And yeah, that's okay. Totally. Totally. This reminds me also, and actually Asha Dornfest, my beloved former co-host, is a big fan of like getting the sides and outsourcing the things that you're not really excited about. But while I will never, ever sugarcoat or silver line the pandemic and all the terribleness that happened around that, I will say that one byproduct related to the holidays was that that very first Thanksgiving after when we couldn't go anywhere and everybody was distancing, it was a moment of realization for my family and me that we were like, wow, we're not even really turkey people. We don't really like stuffing. Like, I mean, there were so many things we didn't even like. And we're like, well, we don't have to make any of this or bring it anywhere. So what do we want to make? And we ended up making 6 different pies. That's all we made. Some of them were savory, some of them were sweet. And it was my kids to this day, they're like, we're just going to do pie Thanksgiving, right?
I love that.
But it was so great. And it's just, it's awesome that the way that that stuck and it gave us a chance to really tap into what we wanted to do and what we loved.
And it affects your ability to be grateful. You know, you could sit down and make yourself grateful about the one pie that you had in the midst of cooking everything and being stressed. But like with some little tweaks, and not everyone can make the same tweaks, but when we make those little tweaks that we can, we amplify our ability to do that. Mm-hmm. I will say this, like, you know, talking about gratitude over time, we haven't talked a lot about gratitude in relationships, like being grateful of a person.
Yes. Tell me about your thoughts there.
Well, so I'm in the middle of writing this book. My next book is about relationships. And in particular, it's about the difficulty of how hard it is to kind of accurately assess your relationship when you maybe didn't have models.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe you've got some things going on in your life that are not represented in a lot of discourse about relationships. You've got some mental health stuff or you're neurodivergent and it's kind of, you're going, okay, I know that like arguing is normal, but then there's like a level of it that's like not good for me, but like, I don't know what's going on. Like, I don't know how to look at my relationship and kind of assess and whether that's your romantic relationship or your friendships or, you know, your parenting. And as much as I hate to say that, like, they're, you know, that normal is a thing, I think that that's what the feeling is. It's like, what is normal?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think gratitude is an interesting one to kind of bring into that conversation, because I will sometimes see things where someone will go, you know, my partner, you know, it's so important for your partner to be considerate of you. My partner every morning wakes up early, makes the coffee, and brings me a cup of coffee in bed.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, oh, that's so sweet. And then if you're like me, you go, well, my partner doesn't do that. And then I almost get into this weird place of shame of like, oh, is my relationship not good enough?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, is my, you know, are we not measuring up? And what has been helpful to me, especially because it's easy to compare other people's, I always say, like, you compare their highlight reel to your behind the scenes footage.
Yes, yes, yes.
And, you know, I have a like loving, respectful relationship. And so the context of like the place for gratitude in that is when you see those things that want to make you compare and you go, okay, well, let's stop for a second. My partner is never going to wake up early and make a pot of coffee. It's not his thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. And if the whole point of that person talking about their partner waking up early for the coffee, yada, yada, was they think about me and they put effort into brightening my day. Well, then I go, well, you know what? My partner, every time he goes to the 7-Eleven on the way home, he doesn't go every day, but every time he goes on the way home to get himself something, he always brings home a red Gatorade.
Mm-hmm.
Because I love red Gatorade. And the first 3 years of asking, do you want anything in the store? And sometimes I would say that. Now it's just automatic. He just brings it home.
Yeah.
And there is this aspect of, okay, you know, this is the real person that I chose to be in partnership with. And they're not going to have all the same strengths as everyone else. And I don't have all the same strengths as everyone else. But it's important to me to focus on those times that he does express those things, because mm-hmm. that's his strength.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. the reason that I always tread lightly here is because the point of gratitude in relationships is to support the reality of your relationship, not to deny it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that the way you talked about the somebody's highlight reel versus your behind the scenes, I mean, I think that's so accurate, especially around the holidays. I don't know. My mind is always, when I'm looking at social or whatever at these times of year, I actually feel just super anxious, because I was in a very toxic relationship at one point, pre-marriage, where this person didn't have anywhere to go for holidays. And so I always thought about that when I was with my family. And now, like, I think, so now when I see holiday highlight reels, I always think about the people who are on their own and don't have support. But that's related to actually something I wanted to pivot to a little bit more. And I would love to hear your thoughts about the ability to access gratitude and even process it contingent on what your support system looks like.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I sort of referenced earlier in our conversation, I can't remember if it was this one or the first episode, you know, seeing my daughter get off the bus and come running to me going, "Mama," in front mm-hmm. of all the kids on the bus, and having that moment of like, wow, I want to savor this moment. And we often talk about savoring the moment as an exercise, but I have experienced it instead as a result.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the cause, like we talk about it as the cause of gratitude, right? So if someone says, I'm just so overwhelmed with parenting, I'm just so overwhelmed with you know, all the needs and all of this, and it's so much work. And well, you know, think about this and think about, you know, how great it is when they come off the da-da-da. That's like, okay, that's going to cause gratitude. I have really experienced it as the result of gratitude though, which is, you know, when I got to a place, like fast forward, you know, a couple of years, and I feel more supported now than I was a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Just in general. And it's like the space for gratitude has opened up for me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when your needs are being met, it makes room for those kinds. It's easier to make those observations.
Yes.
And I'm not having to, you know, look for the needle in the haystack when I'm trying to look for something to be grateful for. And I think that's really important, because when you see someone talking about gratitude, when you see someone saying, just focus on the good stuff. I mean, this good thing is happening and this good thing is happening and this good thing is happening. I mean, it's really easy to be grateful when all your needs are met.
Yeah. Completely, completely. Yeah.
And I don't want that to become a way of bypassing like legitimate conversations of, hey, I'm not being cared for enough. I'm not being supported enough.
Mm-hmm.
No amount of gratitude is going to change that or fix that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't mean that gratitude can't be helpful, but it does mean, like we said earlier, like gratitude is something that helps you enjoy the beauty of life amidst the difficulty.
Yes.
And it has to give you permission to take the difficulty seriously and hold it up and go, no, we will address this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I feel like I have so many cute little quote cards I'm going to make from you, Casey. You just have so much wisdom that you're bringing to this very nuanced conversation, and I'm really appreciative of that. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back to talk about some practical coping skills.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Bree.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Bree, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down,
or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.
Well, hey there, busy mama. Are you looking for ways to make your life easier, your home less chaotic, and at the same time, add more joy to your life? My name is Deanna Yates, and I'm the host of Wanna Be Clutter Free, a podcast all about letting go of the stuff we don't need in our lives so that we can focus on what truly matters. Don't worry, I'm not going to tell you to throw it all away or make you feel guilty about keeping something you love, no matter how many other people don't quite understand it. But I will give you practical and, more importantly, actionable advice so that you can make progress right away. And you won't just hear it from me. There are amazing guests, too. It's like having your bestie in your pocket, telling you it's okay to let go of the things that are not serving you and your family in a totally non-judgmental way. So join me over on the podcast where we can work on progress over perfection for those of us that want to be clutter-free.
Friends, we're back with the wonderful Casey Davis. And I actually want to start, Casey, talking about an episode you recently published called When Mindfulness Doesn't Work. It was with Dr. Raquel Martin. And I think I wanted to bring this up because I remember I was listening to it and I was typing some notes into my phone app because I was like, ooh, this is like, there's nuance, there's connectivity here. And I think the reason I wanted to bring it up and get your further thoughts on it is because, as we talked about earlier, there's no one-size-fits-all solution for gratitude or mindfulness. And the thing that really struck me about your conversation was the section where you were talking about tapping into sensory delights as a source of calm and healing. So, you know, she was talking about, you know, good smells, tactile things like crocheting, and I love the idea of tuning into sensory things that you respond positively to, and then also like the power of switching up the sensory focus as like a novel stimuli, mm-hmm. which I think is really, really cool. And I mean, part of my dissertation was on multimodal, like this shouldn't be surprising to me. But anyway, I just think it's, you know, so for example, say you're listening to a meditation, you know, switching the sensory modality to something like smell or taste or whatever is probably, for novelty's sake, going to be more effective than switching to a different meditation track. So I'm curious if you have thoughts about doing similar self-evaluations parallel to mindfulness with gratitude.
Yes. I think it ties into that conversations about sensory delights because, you know, the little example that I kept going back to as we've been talking about, you know, when I was sitting on my porch this morning working and it was raining and I was thinking, gosh, I love the rain, and giving myself permission to stop and really have this like meta awareness of I didn't make this come about. It's just happening and good things happen to me sometimes. And yes, distressing things do too. Sometimes, you know, life is a big, weird, meaningless swirl, but just like sometimes the suffering is random, the beauty is too. And the whole swirl is ultimately worth it if I allow myself to be aware and experience and honor the whole breadth of the experience. And so, you know, but that recognition, like what was pleasurable in that is like the sound of rain is amazing to me. Mm-hmm. And there's something about slowing down and going, well, how many things are pleasurable to me that I could actually do and create? And, you know, there was a time when I was talking about like doing a reset of my space, which is what I call like having to kind of do my Sunday clean. Mm-hmm. And we have this idea of, you know, once I clean everything up, you know, the icing on the cake is like, I'll put a candle that I love in the middle. And it's like this reward. And what I started doing was flipping that and doing it backwards and saying, actually, what I like to do before I clean anything is do, I'm really into simmer pots. So I have this like pretty pot. Mm-hmm. And you put water in it and it boils and you put like cinnamon and cloves and like things that smell really good and music that sounds really good and then move into the cleaning. And so you have this moment of not just pleasure, but gratitude, right? So like I allow myself, I set it up. I allow myself to have the joy of this smells good, this sounds good. And I allow myself that moment of gratitude to reflect on, man, smells exist. Mm-hmm. Like this song
isn't that amazing?
Like that's amazing. And it doesn't have to be deep or profound. It can literally just go, oh, and I like that. Like that's kind of in practice more the it's not this big, like, wow. And I think that tuning into those sensory things that you respond positive to and allowing yourself to take a beat and recognize it does that same reinforcement of, you know, those neural pathways that allows you to notice things better and more clearly as you go along.
Mm. Yeah, I love that. I love that. I was just reminded of a couple tactics that I wanted to share. One, I was the beneficiary of, but I was just this past weekend, we're recording this before my 50th birthday, and over the weekend, I was with my family and we were killing time in the car. You know, we have a couple hour car ride ahead of us. And my husband said, okay, let's play a game. He's usually the one that kind of keeps the kids from getting tremendously bored and unruly. And he said, let's see if we can come up with 50 things we appreciate about mom. So I got to just sit there and listen to them reel things off. But I will say, even if it's not, you don't get a 50 things about mom or whoever list, I think there is a power to saying things out loud, whether it's in that kind of way, whether I actually think I learned this tactic from an educator friend years ago, but she was talking about how when your kid comes from school, one of the really good tactics you can do with them is ask them for a high and a low on the day. Like, what was something great that happened? What was something crappy? And it both gives you like a sense of what happened and also gives them a chance to give voice to both the good and the bad, which is really related to what we've been talking about across these two episodes about the need to have all the feelings and to not discount, you know, the difficult stuff in service of the positive stuff. So, I mean, I think saying those things out loud, we also do before dinner, you know, we'll say our form of grace and we usually say a couple things we're grateful for. And I think those tiny little moments of articulation can really be powerful over time. I feel like there's a cumulative effort in some way or effect rather.
Yeah. And I also think, you know, when we are talking to, even if it's our friends, our partners, you know, the people in our lives about difficult things, I think that that's a good sort of rule of thumb for anyone. Like, you know, before we jump to the highs, to honor those lows. And if somebody is talking about something difficult with me, you know, maybe allowing yourself to ask two or three curious questions about what the difficult thing is before moving on to trying to comfort them. And, you know, everybody has a different communication style and a different sort of way that they approach things. And so I have found that helpful, just the idea of getting curious. So, and what did that feel like? So what are you telling yourself? And I have to kind of allow myself to not assume that I understand what someone is describing.
Yeah.
And ask those clarifying questions. And sometimes that's like the best way that I know to prevent myself from rushing someone to a solution or to comfort or to like them feeling as though I'm engaging in that toxic positivity, which is like giving voice to, we've talked a couple of times about giving voice to the difficultness. And I imagine people at home are going, okay, well, how do I do that? Like, how literally do I do that? And I think it can be as simple as, you know, active listening, asking those follow-up questions, and sometimes explicitly asking someone, you know, what would be helpful right now? Like, do you want to keep venting about this? Mm-hmm. Or do you want to talk about solutions?
This leads me to it's related to our relationships conversation earlier. It's related to a lot of things, but how would you recommend, and I think of this as a tactic, when you're asking somebody, well, how do you recommend people handle that balance of what they need in a relationship as they're asking a question like, you know, do you need to vent or do you need to just be listened to or what are you looking for advice? I think it's so complicated when we're in relationships. We talked about this in our other episode, how it can be really difficult for people to both hold the space for somebody else when they're in a deep period of struggle, as well as holding their own reactions to it. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious if you have any recommendations for how to handle that, because I think that's a big challenge. Like, you know, and relationships are often the things that help us and sustain us, but they're also hard.
So I think that there's an interesting concept around grief that I think can be applied here. And I've heard people talk about this idea of grief, thinking about concentric circles and how, you know, at the center of the circle is the people closest to that person that is now gone, that has died. And that, you know, then one circle out is maybe like extended family. And then one circle out are friends, and one circle out are acquaintances. And it talked about how, you know, if you need to process how difficult someone's loss is to you, to just be aware that as a general rule, processing to people who are in your same sort of ring of proximity or a ring outside of yours. Mm-hmm. And so practically what this would look like is that, you know, if a coworker of mine died, I don't go to his partner and start talking about how hard it is on me that this coworker is gone. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I think that this can be something that is not used as a rule, but just as a general concept that can be helpful. You know, if something happened to my partner and they're sharing with me, you know, how that's making them feel and I'm having feelings about it, there are times when it's appropriate for me to then share with my partner, gosh, and here's how I'm feeling about it. And there are going to be times when it might be more beneficial for me to kind of like listen, hold space for them. And then at a different time, go to one of my, like an outer ring, go to one of my friends, go to my therapist, go to a family member and go, okay, you know, my friend, like, for example, if you have a friend that goes, hey, I'm getting a divorce, and they're talking to you about their divorce, and them getting a divorce starts to give you feelings, right? You're like, okay, wow, if they can get a divorce, you know, anybody could get a divorce, and is my marriage okay? And you kind of, and you recognize like, oh, this isn't a thing to ask my friend to hold space for. That's like going through the divorce. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so you can stay in that place with them and kind of put your thing. I literally visualize myself like putting it in a little pot and putting a lid on the pot and putting it on the back burner and like turning it down to simmer. Mm-hmm. It's like, this is still, we're going to keep this warm for another time. And being able to stay in that space of helping my friend process through that. And then later going and finding someone else and going, I got a pot on the back burner that I need to bring it up front and center and turn it up to boil and really talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really, really good. Since we're talking about heat, and I'm going to ask you for, you know, if you have any final practical tactics for tapping into gratitude during hard seasons, but I would be remiss if I didn't mention, I mean, we've talked a lot about micro and how important that is. And my listeners certainly know how tuned I am to that. And I do want to underscore that micro has really saved me during some dark times. And so I don't think you know this story, so I'm going to just tell you the story, and some listeners might not be familiar with this one, but, during the pandemic, I I haven't talked publicly about what was happening, and I really can't do so now, but I was probably in one of the darkest places in my life, and I was very alone and very unhappy and dealing with some really, really hard stuff that I had to deal with alone. I mean, with my partner, but people didn't know what was going on. And I found myself all of a sudden being the person who, like, when I went to go to the coffee maker in the morning, I'm standing there in the dark. When I forgot to set it up the night before, I would get to the coffee maker in the morning and I would like burst into tears. Like, it was the worst thing that had ever happened to me. And like, I was just, that's how low it was. And so it was really sad and kind of pathetic. And then also I had a spark where I was like, wait a second. It was like former cognitive experimental psychologist Christine kicked into gear. And I said, well, wait, if something that tiny can completely unravel me, perhaps if I can remember to do it tomorrow, then that could be a source of like a good feeling, joy, gratitude, whatever. And so I did. I started trying to, like, I set little reminders for myself and I started to set up the coffee early. And it wasn't always perfect. Sometimes I forgot, but routinely the days that I set it up in the morning, I'd be like, oh my God, yes, today is going to be all right.
It's a moment of gratitude.
Yes. And then the days I didn't, I'd be like, oh. So I just want to say that because at the time these episodes are airing, and really whenever you come to them, because this is an evergreen situation, like having hard seasons and figuring out how to survive them. I just wanted to share that story again, because really sometimes the little things are the big things. That's where I'm going to leave that.
I love that story because when you first talked about, like, you know, standing in front of the coffee and bursting into tears because the coffee's not there. And the first thing that I really thought was, you know, the purpose of gratitude is to alleviate suffering. It's not to fix pain. And pain and suffering are different. Mm-hmm. Pain is part of life. Things are painful. And feeling pain is not wrong or bad. It's not comfortable, but it is survivable. Mm-hmm. Suffering is something, in my experience, that happens when we start to add certain thoughts and beliefs on top of pain.
Ooh, okay.
Right? So, yeah. So having... you know, losing a job is painful. The thoughts of I've screwed up again. Mm. I'll never have a job that I like. I'm never going to like those sort of like that creates the suffering. Mm-hmm. And I think that gratitude is something that can be really helpful at pushing back against sort of that extra suffering that we add to it. Mm-hmm. But also, like, there are things in life that are so big and so painful that if what you're experiencing is just feeling pain, I don't think that it's necessarily true that, like, okay, quick, let's get grateful.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's not something that, like, you have to be doing. It's not something that is maybe even what you should do those first few days of how painful it is, or first few weeks, or like what it, like, you're going to know the time frame, right? It's not that feeling that pain is so bad and we need to make the pain less, although we'd all like to be in less pain. Mm-hmm. I think that as you move through that pain authentically, as you cry in front of that coffee pot, right, that there will come a day when you go, okay, is there something that I could do to care for myself in this moment?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that you are like obligated to think that on the first day that you cry in front of the coffee pot.
Yes.
Like, you're allowed to just cry in front of the coffee pot because that's how hard it is, however many days it's necessary. And then, like, there'll come a time when you can break the surface for a moment and get a breath. And I think what it is about empowering people in those moments of coming up for air to go, okay, now that I've got a breath, how can I care for myself? Mm-hmm. What beauty is around me? How can I set up, you know, make my coffee pot for me? Can I move my slippers to my bed so that I can wake up and feel the gratitude of warm feet as I, you know, walk across the floor? And I think that it's important for us to kind of put gratitude at its right sizedness so it doesn't become that toxic kind of Band-Aid.
Yes.
Ooh, like it's powerful, beautiful. But it's not all powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. Okay, Casey, we need to wrap things up. And I want to conclude with what we always conclude with on the show, which is called Your Next Edit. It's a really tactical action that people can consider doing right after we finish the show. I'm going to give you a moment to collect your thoughts while I share one that actually is inspired by you and your conversation with Dr. Raquel Martin, and then our follow-up here. And my Your Next Edit for listeners is I would like people to identify three, I'm not even going to ask you to capture all the senses, but three different sensory delights that you could tap into, whether it's a piece of music or a good smelling candle or whatever it is. But you pick your three, but I like the idea that people could have access to three different sensory delights during their hard times. Does this exercise make sense? Would you like to share your next edit now?
I like it. So my charge would be, to give yourself the extra beat when you recognize something in your day that has brought you pleasure. So whether it's something funny you saw, something good you smelled, something great you ate, something, you know, the interaction, to allow yourself an extra beat to just literally in your head go, oh, that was good.
Mm. Those gratitude journals, they had an impact.
I know. I hate to say it.
Casey, this was so delightful. I just feel really filled up from our two conversations that we had, and I can't wait to share both episodes with the Edit Your Life community. So thank you. I am tremendously grateful for our new friendship and to be connected with you. Thanks for joining the show.
Thank you so much.
Friends, was that not so wonderful? If you haven't yet had a chance to listen to part one of this conversation over on Struggle Care, please go do that or mark it in your queue ASAP. You'll find the show notes for this episode, including links to resources and related episodes at edityourlifeshow.com. As ever, I would love to hear your thoughts and questions. Come say hello on Instagram or Facebook at edityourlifeshow or send an email to edityourlifeshow@gmail.com. I would also be grateful if you would drop Edit Your Life a review on Apple Podcasts or tell a pod-loving friend about the show. Thanks for listening.
I'm Margaret.
And I'm Amy.
And together we host the podcast, What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood.
Margaret, I would say you're sort of a where are my keys kind of mom.
Correct. Sometimes a where are my kids kind of mom. Well, you're, Amy, more of a we were supposed to leave 35 seconds ago, mom.
I mean, touche. In each episode of What Fresh Hell, we come at a topic from our usually completely opposite perspectives. I bring the research.
And I bring kind of the gimlet eye. Like, is that research really going to work, people?
And almost 10 million downloads later, we're still laughing.
We also talk to experts in the parenting field, plus parents with stories we can all learn from.
We make each other laugh, we challenge each other's assumptions, and we have what we think is the best parenting community on the internet.
Check out What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood, wherever you listen to podcasts.